Roxo Media House.
This week on the Signal 51 Chronicles, love, lust, and murder in Cowtown.
Murder.
Jake, long time no see here in the studios at the Roxo House, Roxo Media House in Southwest Fort Worth, Texas.
It has been a minute or two.
Our fans have been clamoring.
So they say.
For more content.
So they say. Actually, no. None of them have. No, they have. I have had some people ask.
I usually have one that asked me, and I haven't heard from her. And siblings. They also want to know, too, what's going on. But I haven't heard from them either.
I'm just going to go ahead and zip it.
Well, we've got a pretty good little story here that we've alluded to before.
Yeah.
Now, you remember a few years ago, the talk of the town, aside from in those days, the you know what, that we dare not speak its name, the COVID-19. Do you remember this Netflix documentary called Tiger King?
Yes.
You look annoyed when I asked that question. Were you not a Tiger King fan?
No.
I mean, Tiger King was a disaster, of course.
Yeah, no.
But it was pretty fascinating.
It was fascinating. I say that. I say that not watching all of them because
You bowed out early?
I couldn't make it through. I tried. I wanted to see what the hype was about.
Oh, I watched the whole thing.
I bet you did.
6 episodes or whatever it was.
And then they had a part 2 come out.
That I did not see.
Hey, don't forget, you did interview the Tiger King lawyer.
I did. Francisco Hernandez, yeah. That's correct. Yeah, because the Tiger King lives not far from where we sit, confined in the federal pen.
Yeah.
Near Campus Drive.
I wonder if he's still there.
I think so.
Some reports had him on his deathbed.
Well, do you remember when Trump was passing out all those pardons?
Yeah, and they had protests by the prison. Free Tiger King or whatever.
They might have. I don't remember that. But they had all these cars lined up because he or his lawyers were convinced that the Trumpster was going to give him a pardon. He had to have been Trump had to have been screwing around with somebody over there having fun because they were convinced that he was going to get a pardon.
That would have been.
He didn't.
If he did, though, the backlash, the uproar.
Oh, yeah. You think January 6th was bad? Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder if, I don't know, whatever. But that Tiger King, the biggest stock pot imaginable of just about every design flaw of the human condition right there. Yes. Hubris, jealousy, lust of power, greed, vanity, self-pity, delusion, hypocrisy. You name it. It was in play with the predictable Hindenburg-esque outcomes, that Tiger King. But it's the train wreck you can't keep your eyes off of. Well, at least I couldn't. You could, I guess. You're the one who said you couldn't watch it all, but I couldn't keep my eyes off of it.
So I'm actually surprised by that.
Why? I'm a simpleton.
I think one could argue to the contrary.
Well, I mean, you know, that's just a lifestyle and everything else that I'm completely foreign to me. So, I mean, what is happening?
I can see that. I can see that. I suppose that. Okay, that makes a little more sense.
Well, over the years, naturally, we've had our own combustible locomotive collisions here in town. But there was one of a unique bedlam that held particular fascination for the observer in its day. That would be the Boyce-Sneed feud. It had all those self-destructive attributes spun like the most sophisticated spider web in this truth is stranger than fiction tome. Add in a heaping helping of a defense attorney who has anchored himself a spot in history as a man who would literally do and say anything to win for his client. In the courtroom, William P. Bill McLean II was every bit as exotic and eccentric and with as much flair as any character in that Tiger King. We all remember that Richard Racehorse Haynes, right?
Legendary.
Well, Wild Bill McLean was Richard Racehorse Haynes on the baddest ass dose of steroids known to the modern world. We also have heard of that Colin Davis affair. Well, that Colin Davis affair was small-time marbles compared with the feud involving three Texas panhandle families who, by way of circumstances, wild circumstances, used Fort Worth as its climactic stage in January 1912. Well, one of the stages.
John Beale Sneed, Al Boyce Jr., and Lena Snyder all grew up together in and around Georgetown, Texas.
Just north of Austin.
Georgetown, Texas. Indeed it is. Their families were instrumental in the founding of Southwestern University in Georgetown, where all three attended. Only Beale Sneed finished, leaving there for UT Law School, which he also successfully completed. All three families moved to the Panhandle following the cattle and land business. And aside, Carly Fiorina, the one-time presidential candidate and Ted Cruz's, quote, running mate, she was a Sneed.
I remember her.
Beale and Lena were married by then, while Al Boyce Jr. lived with his family down the street in Amarillo. Beale was away on business quite a bit.
Uh-oh.
I don't think we know what road we're going down. Because you don't have to be well-read in primetime soaps or even that 50 Shades to know where this is going.
How long did it take you to read that? It get through that 50 Shades.
Just a few nights, man. Lena and Al begin a very hot love affair. Lots of steam. Author Bill Neal splendidly covers the tragedy that ensued in his book, Vengeance is Mine. I highly recommend, for those who are into that sort of thing, buy it. Just one click now.
I did it.
Easy.
It's very good.
As part of his plan to punish his wife, Beale, a disordered and sadistic personality, as it was, who intended to punish everyone involved with the sin that humiliated him, ship Lena to the Arlington Heights Sanitarium in Fort Worth. He had her committed through a very dubious non-judicial process, claiming she was, quote, morally insane.
Morally insane. Now, I got 2 points here. I can't believe that the Arlington Heights Sanitarium went out of business. I mean, it seems to me that they could have new patients there every day.
Oh,
on our little west side of Fort Worth.
They could. And I'm glad that this very dubious non-judicial process is no longer a thing.
Morally insane?
Yes.
We'll get into that.
I mean, if this process still existed to where you could just allege something and you get checked into the Arlington Heights Sanitarium.
Yeah. I mean, they could march people in and out of left, east, west, north, and south, just on the west side, send them to that sanitarium.
Can you imagine?
Between morally insane, normal insane, Oscar's insane.
We'd both be there.
Well, it's possible.
I would. I know somebody who would check me in. Promise you that. Need a little vacation? Check me in.
Go to the sanitarium.
Yeah.
Get a cool warm bath. 3 squares.
Yeah. Well, it was for that reason that Beale was in Fort Worth, checking Lena back into the hospital after she and Al had escaped to Winnipeg, Canada.
See, I don't want to go to Winnipeg, Canada. Nope. I'll just go to the sanitarium.
Nope. It so happened that Al Boy Sr., Al's father, who went by Colonel or Captain, was in Fort Worth at the same time, lobbying the district attorney to drop the charges that Beal had urged be filed against Al Jr. in connection with the elopement, including stealing her jewelry. Beal also sought a federal charge of, quote, white slavery. Beal and Captain Boyce found themselves in the other's company at the Metropolitan Hotel, located on or near the site of the JFK tribute at Main Street, a mere block from the now doomed,
certainly soon to be doomed.
Well, yeah, soon to be doomed Fort Worth Convention Center Arena.
Saw the Globetrotters there a few times.
Yeah. And the Fort Worth Fire?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
Covered them?
Right. Forgot them? No, I did not.
Oh.
I did, yeah, but you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
So what happened was widely disputed. The state's best witness, Ed Throckmorton, son of the governor, died suspiciously before trial. But Beal mortally wounded Captain Boyce in the lobby, firing 5 bullets into the elderly man. The incident set off 2 sensational trials inside of that Tarrant County courthouse.
Same one that's there today.
Same one. In the end, Beal Sneed was twice acquitted in 3 murder trials. His first in Fort Worth ended in a mistrial. A juror or jurors were likely bribed. In between the end of that first trial and the second trial, he hunted down Al Boyce Jr. and killed him in Amarillo in September of 1912.
It's bold strokes, this alleged murder, huh? That you just kill somebody inside the lobby?
Yeah. Hey, I mean,
could happen today.
Well, we did have the courthouse shooting. What was that, 30 years ago, I guess?
Yeah,
now,
but we did have the courthouse shooting. You're right.
Now you got a
guy got pissed off over his divorce or something, or I think it was divorce.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So we need to touch on that. We need to review that one.
What, a guy getting pissed off about his divorce?
No.
Oh.
That particular case.
Yeah, it is kind of. Yeah, there's a few facts on there that are pretty interesting.
George something or another. Yeah. Well, we'll have to think of his name here. Well, Beal won acquittal in Fort Worth for the second trial in the Captain Boyce murder, and in Vernon on charges of killing Al Jr. Beal never denied killing either. His assets in getting away with murder, literally, were a bungling prosecution trying to play ball with the best. Beal McLean, as Wild Bill, as he was known and as he is known, was known in his industry at the time. Over the course of the entire 2-year ordeal, McLean went 4-0. The mistrial, the 2 Sneed acquittals, plus the acquittal of Sneed's alleged accomplice in Amarillo. McLean was the son of William P. McLean, the namesake of that Pascal High School feeder, McLean Middle School. The father was a distinguished Texas statesman with 2 terms in the state legislature, 1 term as a U.S. congressman, as well as a district judge. In fact, they called him Judge McLean. I've even spoken to Judge McLean's 3-time great-grandson, I think. He's a lawyer here in town, and he still calls him Judge McLean.
Really?
Yes.
Not grandpappy or anything?
Calls him Judge McLean. That's kind of. And Judge McLean was also a member of the state's first railroad commission appointed by Governor Hogg. You know what's funny about Governor Hogg?
What?
He has a daughter named Ima.
That.
No, I really think he does. No, he does. He named his daughter Ima.
I thought you were legitimately just cracking one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
I don't roll that way, sir. My jokes are all very
factually based.
Well, and some people say, now he supposedly had a second daughter named Yura. Now I think that is baloney. But his first daughter was named Ima.
All right.
He did not have a daughter named Yura.
But he did, in fact, have one named Ima.
He did. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I didn't take this Texas history stuff when I was
a kid. Now you know the rest of the story. Well, back to Judge McLean. During Reconstruction, he got another job. His state called on him to serve as part of the post-Civil War convention that wrote the state constitution of 1876. That's the one we use today. That's the one that got Texas back into the Union. Now, Judge McLean, he also fought on the side of the Confederacy. Let's just keep that between us. But he moved to Fort Worth in 1893, where he was able to, quote, realize his dream of the undisturbed practice of the law. Another side note on Judge McLean, he had another son named Jeff, who as county attorney, which is today translated to district attorney, he was murdered while taking part in a raid of a gambling house in 1907 in Fort Worth. That's another one we should touch on. We should go back and look at. That's a pretty good one too. Well, I don't understand the smile there, Jake.
I was picturing was the district attorney going out on a gambling raid today.
You don't think that would happen?
I don't think so. It would be interesting, I suppose, to see that.
I'm going to go, there's no chance that happens today.
No, there's 0% chance that happens. They should bring it back, though.
They should. Another factoid about Judge McLean. A town in the panhandle bears his name, McLean. It's near Pampa. The metropolis of Pampa. Used to have really good high school basketball teams there.
Any of them make it to the NBA?
No.
Then I don't think they were that good.
Well, I mean, white farm boys from the panhandle are not generally the prototype for an NBA player. They had good high school teams, so they came down here and played. We played them. Beat them every time.
Who beat them?
We did. Nolan High School. Played them in the West Side Lions tournament.
You're talking like in the 70s?
The Waterbury tournament. When did you start drinking today?
I'm kidding.
It was the late 80s, sir. The late 80s. Well, Judge McLean was part of this defense team in the Sneed trials. He worked for the firm McLean, Scott, and McLean. A gentleman by the name of Walter Scott was the other partner. I don't have any facts about Walter Scott. I know you're disappointed.
I'm surprised.
But at his death at age 69 in 1941, Bill McLean, the son, he was the captain and quarterback of the University of Texas' first football team. I wonder if they were lousy then as they are now. But he has successfully, when he died, he has successfully defended 75 defendants against the charge of murder over the course of 35 years as a defense attorney. Does that seem like a big number to you? Seems like a big number to me.
Successfully?
Just even defending 75. But he did it successfully. Yes, he defended
impossible today.
I mean, does a defense attorney even come close to defending 75 guys against murder?
No, not even. I mean, the vast majority of the time, what's the outcome? Guilty.
No way it's successful, right?
No.
But what about just defending 75 people against murder in your career over 35 years?
No, there's no way.
How in the world is
that?
Well,
I say that. I don't know. Maybe there is.
Mm-mm. I'm going to go with no, but of course, I'm saying that without any shred of evidence.
A little more than two a year.
All right. Now you're doing the math on me.
Yeah.
Okay. That does sound more logical.
I mean, it's more like possible. Your record's probably more of like 3-72, though.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Instead of 75-0.
Certainly. Well, this McLean, Bill, Wild Bill, he was synonymous with the biggest murder cases across the Southwest in his day. And the tactics and things he would say during trial went well beyond controversial. And I'll be honest with you, I am not easily offended. You could say anything to me, and it probably won't impact me at all.
No, I've noticed.
But the things I read that he said even made me wince, and reading them 100 years later certainly does. A good example was his representation of Earl Mayfield, the Democrat nominee for the U.S. Senate from Texas in 1922. So he wasn't charged with anything, but his detractors challenged his eligibility because of filing deadlines, eligibility to run because of filing deadlines and other technical issues. Mayfield, because he was a proponent of prohibition, was also considered the candidate of the Ku Klux Klan. And today, McLean's presentation in front of the jury that would decide this guy's eligibility, I guess the jury is the right word, would be, to put it nicely, considered vulgar and grounds for rebuke and likely disbarment. It was brutal. I read it. I didn't include it in this. But was Bill McLean a racist? Maybe. Don't know. Never met him. But it also would not have been below McLean to use language simply because he knew it would appeal to his audience, that jury. He seemed to recognize no shame. McLean fought for his clients and did so with brass knuckles. The ethics of the whole thing seemed optional. At one point during the Sneed trials, a brother of Al Boyce Jr. lunged at McLean, who harassed Annie Boyce, the widow of Captain Boyce, the father of Al Jr., during cross-examination. She said she didn't know that Lena was to be, quote, put where there are insane people, and had she known, she would have objected, adding that had Lena been, quote, the least bit insane when this thing started, she would have been a raving maniac by now. And McLean said, but she was insane, wasn't she? And Annie said, no, she was not. She was nervous. Al was nervous. Everybody was nervous. There ought to have been more people nervous. And McLean responded, why so concerned about Lena going to a sanitarium? And Annie said, I wouldn't have put a child of mine in a place where there were crazy people. And McLean said, you wouldn't have put Albert there? No, sir, Annie says. And McLean says, don't you think a man running over and disgracing his mother and father and stealing another man's wife and killing that man's little children, don't you think such a man is a fit subject for the asylum or penitentiary? At that point, Lynn Boyce, Al Jr.'s brother, the big Westerner, as the Star Telegram described him, went after McLean. Dropping the knife he used to whittle during the trial. Can you imagine that? I mean, we can't even smoke in the courtroom anymore, much less, I mean.
Whittle?
Whittle. Why don't we just bring out peanuts, you know, and crack them and throw them on the floor. Anyway, he dropped the knife he used, at least he did that, to whittle during the trial and jumped into the ring a la Von Erich. We know the Von Erichs.
Well.
The defense never tried to show the defendant's innocence. But rather that the murder was just according not to the written law of Texas, but the unwritten natural law. McLean's closing arguments in each of the three Bill Sneed trials included something of the same from the first. Quote, every time there is a home broken up, there ought to be a killing of all who assisted in it. When that's done, homes won't be broken up. Wow.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we all know people who believe exactly that. And I've been told once before by a good friend of mine that, you know, messing around with a married woman is a good way to get shot.
I've heard that. I think a lot of people have been shot behind that, maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely they have.
Well, McLean continued by saying, quote, "They say that Captain Boyce was worse hurt over the fact that his son was charged with the theft of diamonds." At Bill Sneed's urging, the county DA charged Dowd Jr. of stealing Lena's jewelry when they eloped. He said, quote, "Then over his son stealing another man's wife, I hope my two little boys will never steal, but if they do, I would 1,000 times rather they would steal diamonds than some other man's wife for diamonds I could replace. But all wealth in the world could not replace the jewel of a woman's virtue once it is taken from her."
And of course, these
deep thoughts right there. Very deep thoughts.
And of course, these that allegation of stealing the jewelry was merely just she was with him when they left town and went to Canada. Yes. He didn't actually steal jewelry, her jewelry, or mind you, her virtue.
It is, but you know, I mean, even by today's standards, how the idea, I guess it's the you know, and a divorce, I mean, really in anything. I mean, somebody always wants to win, and they throw out these just crazy, they fit that square peg into a round hole any way they can. The master of that, old McLean was.
Absolutely.
So this is the defense that appealed to the Deep South Victorian values of each of the 12 men who served on three juries.
All men.
Quote.
All white men.
Yeah. Quote, "They tell us Beal Sneed," quote, "They tell us Beal Sneed killed an old unarmed man. Al Boyce and Colonel Boyce and Henry Boyce helped to murder those two little girls 100 times.
His daughters. Yep. Well, his daughters, yeah.
I would rather that a yellow-bellied moccasin crawled into the bed and bit my boys than know that they were disgraced for life." McLean held up a picture of the bullet-ridden body of Captain Boyce and pointed to Beal Sneed and the two Sneed girls who sat in his lap. He said, quote, "For every wound in his body, I can show 1,000 bullet holes in the heart of John Beal Sneed. If they sent Sneed to the pen, his, quote, deranged wife and all of his property and children would fall into the despoiler's hands. Al Jr. was also disparaged as a drunk. Sneed, McLean said, would rather be sent to the gallows than spend a month in the pen, quote, without the power to protect the woman whom he has tried to protect so far." McLean added this little closer, quote, "I think I can see these little girls in their little white gowns saying their prayers tonight. Now we lay us down to sleep. We pray the Lord our souls to keep. But let us die before we wake, rather than Al Boyce our young lives take."
I wonder how long you worked on that.
He's a wordsmith like you. Mm-hmm. And he also said, "Gentlemen," referring to the jurors, "let your verdict be, we the jury declare that the homes of the country must and shall be protected." Winning today is still everything, but the closer's hard stuff, such as, oh, that famous, "If it does not fit, you must acquit," are little league fastballs compared with what McLean was firing up there.
Indeed, indeed. And that's minor league stuff.
Minor league.
I mean,
we need to find the who is the local showman in the courtroom. There's got to be one.
Yeah. Now, of course, we've talked about Jeff Kearney being this great defense attorney, which he is.
But I think he's real poised.
But I don't think he gets involved in any of that type of stuff.
Yeah. We need to find him. Is it the Lawhawk?
That I was just about to bring him up.
Could be the Lawhawk.
Does he do defense? I don't know what kind of law he does.
Yeah, no, he's a criminal defense attorney.
Is he?
Yeah, but he might do like lower level stuff or something. I don't know.
Yeah, shoplifting.
Yeah, shoplifting, criminal mischief.
Criminal mischief. Give me an example of criminal mischief.
You spray paint the side of a building.
Oh, graffiti.
Graffiti. You break out a window, but you don't steal anything.
Some parts of town, they call that art, Jake, but whatever.
They do. I just read something. The Ruggie Odor thing.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Painted it on the side of that Arlington taqueria.
That was a code violation.
Yeah. But is it not also art?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah, absolutely.
Not in Arlington, it's not, and it's a code violation.
But it's also not graffiti. I mean, it's...
No, but it's modeled after graffiti, right?
I guess.
I don't know. I mean, some of that stuff is pretty cool.
Oh, it's awesome. And I've talked to that guy, that Juan Velasquez, who did that mural.
Oh, he's kind of a big deal, isn't he? Isn't that...
Yeah, he is. Talented dude.
I'm always amazed watching them wield those cans of spray paint.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, from a very non-artistic kind of guy like me.
Right.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive.
Have you ever been involved in your police career in breaking up a graffiti ring?
No. No, I never had that. I mean, I don't think there were too many of them. I am going to give a shout out to a fella that I know.
Oh, yeah?
He was a notorious, I think they called him Taggers.
Oh, yeah, I think they do, yeah.
So this guy may or may not be a cop now.
Uh-huh.
Admitted that in his younger years, mm-hmm. he was a tagger.
Who did he admit this to?
Me.
Not his pre-employment application
he didn't. He never came clean with it on that. He admitted it to me. I pulled it out of him.
Well, your interrogation
skills. My interrogation skills worked. Now... Why he ever told me this, I don't know. But he had a name. They all have names.
The taggers have names?
Yeah. Yeah, they go by, they'll write whatever or paint a picture? Spray paint?
Graffiti?
Graffiti?
I don't know.
And then they sign it with their name.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of this before.
His was called Image.
His name was Image.
He went by the name Image for whatever reason.
Because I suppose it wouldn't be a good idea if, like, I went to a bridge and tagged it or whatever and said, John Henry wrote this. That's not a good idea, that's right?
It's not a good name.
No.
I'm saying as a graffiti artist.
But, I mean, it's also designed so you stay anonymous, right? Like who?
I think so. Who? But, I mean, even if, I mean, look, I mean, John Henry, I mean, that's a.
Well, that could be a fake name.
It could be, but I mean, there's some historical significance to the name John Henry, right?
I mean, other than the steel driving man, the tall tale thing.
But that's what I'm saying. There's
the guy who beat the machine.
Yeah. I guess you could maybe use that as a tiger's name. I don't know. It just doesn't sound very cool, though.
What do we think about this case here? You ever, in your wildest dreams as a police officer, could you ever imagine this case specifically?
No.
Now, one item that's not in here so the Al Boyce Jr., the guy who was involved with the wife.
Is Boyce, the street Boyce, named after them?
Probably? I don't think so.
Maybe?
Because they're Amarillo people. They're only here
that's,
for...
Yeah, that's true.
So Bill Snead gets off. He leaves Fort Worth and he's a free man after killing the father.
Yeah.
He goes back to Amarillo and he stalks Al Boyce Jr. And he finds out his routine and his path home, to and from home and whatever else. And he rents or buys his house just to sit in it, to lay in wait for when Al Jr. comes by. And sure enough, he does one day, and he walks out the house and he shoots him dead. And again, he doesn't deny that he did this at all. And that trial, which what is it, Amarillo County? What is county? What county is Amarillo in? I can't remember what county is in. But anyway, that offense, of course, was committed there. And he hires McLean in Fort Worth to come defend him in Amarillo. And they get a change of venue, and it goes to Vernon, where he's acquitted with the same defense. I mean, Vernon, you know, we're probably not talking.
Is that by Wichita Falls?
Yeah.
Somewhere up around there.
Yeah. It is. It's it's actually, 45 minutes.
Okay. I don't know. These Texas courts were crazy. I mean, these are stories of Tarrant County. Go down to Harris County. Go to Dallas County. Right? They're chocked full of probably similar tales.
Oh, gotta be, right?
Or maybe even worse. I don't know.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, in those days, I mean, having an affair was, I would imagine, was literally the biggest controversy in some of these towns and cities.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just something you absolutely did not do.
Yeah.
Now today it happens, you know, you know, like all stopping at a red light.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's good to be back, Jake.
Good to be back.
How do we find this episode and others as we go forward?
Go on the old YouTube
telling
page.
Tales. YouTube.
Signal 51 Chronicles, Fort Worth's only true crime podcast.
Subscribe on
gotta
YouTube.
Subscribe. We got, you know, all of your preferred podcast platforms. All of them. Get on there, check us out.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Podcast platform? Apple, iTunes.
Apple, Amazon, or
not Amazon.
No, iTunes.
Spotify. Thank you, Joel.
Yeah.
Crack producer is in here.
Putting us in our place.
All right. That's it. See y'all next week.
Later.
Roxo Media House.